This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We have to talk about the AutoPen scandal some more. There's new things out and we have to discuss it. The Supreme Court did something good again. We have all that. Jerome Powell getting the heave-ho from the Fed and so much more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, we have to do something. And before we dig into this Joe Biden AutoPen stuff, I need to explain why. Because when we talk about Joe Biden, anything about the Joe Biden era, whether it's AutoPen or the illegals, whatever it is, there is a tendency, an understandable tendency to say, okay, yeah, it sucked. We all know it sucked. Can't we just move on? It's over now, right? Let's just move on. That is the tendency. But listen, that way of thinking, if that's where you're at, no, we got too many problems now. I don't want to deal with it. If that is your way of thinking, then you should understand that's why no elites ever go down, ever. That exact way of thinking. These people in government, wealthy people all the time, will focus on government people for now. They commit crimes. They do horrific things with their positions of power in the government. And then, well, there's always a new scandal, isn't there? There's always a new House. There's new Senate races, a new presidential race. People have new scandals, new problems, new good things, new bad things. And people just kind of want to move on. I'm just not interested in it. That mentality has crushed us. The lack of justice in this country, meaning wealthy people, elite people being held to account, the lack of justice in this country is crushing this country. And the mentality of it's over, we're done with it, let's move on, that is killing us. We have got to change that mentality, and we have got to start pressing our representatives to change how they act. COVID, how many times have I brought up a COVID reckoning? You know, I haven't let that go. Oh, Jesse, let it go. It was a bad time. Yeah, a bunch of people turned into evil tyrants, and I want them all thrown in prison. That's justice. So back to Joe Biden's AutoPen. We have more details, but we have to explain something. The New York Times ran an article on Joe Biden's AutoPen stuff. The New York Times. Keep in mind, this is a publication, if we want to call it, I was about to call it a tabloid, that has been called the Treason Times on multiple occasions. I believe that was Ann Coulter who actually called him that. The New York Times is a communist front. It has been for a very, very long time. They will destroy Republicans every chance they get. They will protect, enable, push forward Democrats every single chance they get. So they run this piece. Jeff Zients, Joe Biden's chief of staff. What did he do? He used the AutoPen. Apparently gave permission to use the AutoPen. All those pardons. Remember the day the pardons came down? Not just the big ones, you know, the Faucis and those. We'll get to that in a minute. But the volume of pardons. It was just thousands and thousands. And everyone kind of looked around. Every president does it. And it's always gross. I'll just point that out. It's always gross. Every president does it. But Joe Biden did it. I mean, he was just letting scumbags out, as many as he could. How did that happen? Well, they just auto-penned it, basically. They said, well, here's a list. Joe, sign this. You know, we have some additions to the list. You know what? Joe doesn't need to sign it. Let's just put the list out there. That's a really big deal. Now, the bigger deal is, why did the New York Times do this? Why? See, Mark Halperin on his show, he had an interesting little discovery about this article. Here he was.
I thought Joe Biden was pretty good in the interview. But if this shoe were on the other foot, I can't believe the New York Times wouldn't have gone and gotten Adam Schiff's reaction. There's no Republican reaction in that story.
Yeah.
There's no legal expert quoted in the story. Biden is now taking the position that he could delegate pardons, right? That's the position they took in the story. Everything else is fine. That's the one thing. So what do law professors think about that? What do Republicans think about that? It's absent from the story. I don't understand that as a matter of journalism. And I guarantee you, if it were a Republican, they'd have both those things. They'd have some hysterical law professor saying this is an impeachable offense. And they have a Republican saying this needs to be investigated. It's absent from the story. It's mad.
Why? Why not get a statement from a Republican? Why not go get a legal expert? What's going on here? Because, boy, on the surface, wow, New York Times running an article like that? Are they on the up and up now? Man, holding a Democrat to account? Wow. Let me pause on that for a moment. I have two sons, as you know, James and Luke. And you know that I eat poorly. And you know my wife eats super healthy. You know that if you've watched the show for any length of time. One time when they were kids, there was a bag of chips in the cupboard. Now, she had told the boys she wanted them to eat fruit with their sandwiches for lunch. Boys said, okay. They ate the fruit, and then they went to the pantry and ate the entire bag of chips. She was very upset. And I thought it was funny. Two, I thought it was completely understandable. But I didn't want to badmouth my wife or defy my wife in front of the kids. But I also didn't want her to crack down on them, you know, ground them. No, nothing but vegetables. So I took the boys aside in the room, and I gave them a very stern talking to with her in earshot. Came out of the room and said, don't worry, I got it taken care of. They won't do that again. I wasn't punishing the kids. I wasn't really interested in punishing the kids. I was interested in shielding them in that moment from their mother's wrath. The New York Times is well aware that Republicans are looking into the Auto Pen scandal. They are well aware of what Donald Trump has said about it time and time again. He's not letting it go. This is not something Donald Trump's letting go at all. Here's Donald Trump talking about it.
I mean, you're talking about the Auto Pen. Look, the Auto Pen, I think, is maybe one of the biggest scandals that we've had in 50 to 100 years. This is a tremendous scandal. The people on the other side of the Resolute desk, I know them. Lisa, the whole group, and they're no good. They're sick people. And I guarantee he knew nothing about what he was signing. I guarantee it.
That's not a one-off. On social media, publicly, in the media, Donald Trump has said that exact same line over and over again. The biggest scandal in 50 to 100 years. The biggest scandal in 50 to 100 years. The president of the United States of America is not letting this go. And when the president doesn't let something go, there's going to be movement. They are investigating it. It is a very, very, very big deal. And let's pause for just a second and just remember, these people punished the American people almost like it was on purpose for 4 years. Things that, even if you're a Democrat, don't really make sense unless you just hate the country. Why would you just stop natural gas exports? Hold on. You not only opened up the border. Let's say you're some soft on illegal immigration person. Okay, that's a fairly standard Democrat position. They flew as many people into the country as they possibly could, purposely invading the United States of America. They took your tax dollars and created an app so illegals could schedule their invasion of the country. How could you be that evil? How could Joe Biden be that evil? Well, that's the whole point. Joe Biden wasn't running anything. People who hate you and hate this country and have worked their entire lives to burn it down were finally presented with the most damaging weapon they could have been presented with. They were presented with the powers of the presidency. This human being, Anita Dunn, this human being was essentially the president of the United States of America.
And then the third lesson and tip actually come from two of my favorite political philosophers, Mao Zedong and Mother Teresa, not often coupled with each other, but the two people that I turn to most. In 1947, when Mao Zedong was being challenged within his own party on his plan to basically take China over, Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalist Chinese held the cities, they had the army, they had the air force, they had everything on their side. And people said, how can you win? How can you do this? against all of the odds against you. And Mao Zedong said, you know, you fight your war and I'll fight mine.
That was the president of the United States of America. Her husband, too. Jill Biden, that horrific witch. They ran the country for 4 years. And I'm very, very worried we're going to succumb to the same thing that's human nature. Hey, let's let it go. Let's let bygones be bygones. It's too old now. We're worried about just inflation now. No. These people savaged my country for 4 years. Somebody better be held to account. We will not let it go. It's a big deal. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Josh Hammer is going to join us in a moment. We're going to ask him all these pardons. Fauci, Milley, if it wasn't Joe Biden clicking the approve button, could we hold these people to account finally? I have questions. Josh will have answers. Before we get to Josh, let me tell you about Pure Talk. The wondrous, wondrous Pure Talk. Pure Talk, I mean, I have all these emails from you. And you know what these emails are from? July 4th, Independence Day. Remember when I told you Pure Talk was handing out American flags to veterans for Independence Day? Email after email came in of how blessed your dad was, your brother was, the veteran in your life was to get one. And it makes me so proud to stand with Pure Talk. A company that's led by a Vietnam veteran, so patriotic, they hire Americans. You don't need Verizon. You don't need AT&T or T-Mobile. Pure Talk's on the same 5G network. You'll pay less. There's no reason not to switch. These are people you can be proud to spend your money with, and you'll spend less. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. The Supreme Court gave us another win, I think. I don't know. Half the time, I think they gave us a win, but that's because I'm stupid, and then I'll dig into it, and I'll find out that we didn't get a win. Let's ask Josh Hammer about it. Joining me now, Josh Hammer, host of The Josh Hammer Show. Josh, what did the Supreme Court do with education? Linda McMahon, are we done with the Department of Education permanently?
Well, Jesse, not to be a lawyer, but you did intro me as a lawyer. It kind of depends what we mean by permanently. So, look, this is, not the typical merits docket where we have the full lawyers do the full briefing argumentation there. This kind of comes up on the emergency appeals docket. And long story short, yes, the Supreme Court has cleared the way for the Trump administration to dismiss at least 1,300 Department of Education staffers, which is a lot. That is a lot of bureaucrats there at the Department of Education. A bureaucracy, frankly, that simply should not exist and that conservatives have been railing against ever since Jimmy Carter established it during the late 1970s. It is a commonsensical ruling, Jesse. I mean, ultimately, the Article II executive power, if the executive power in Article II of the Constitution means literally anything whatsoever, it necessarily entails and requires the ability to make full personnel decisions, to fire and hire whoever you want for whatever reason at any time, period, full stop, end of story. And any statutes that Congress has passed, any executive orders that have been signed over the past 200, nearly 50 years now, that purport to limit the authority of the executive to do exactly that are, in my judgment, facially unconstitutional. This is very much in line with the Roberts Court, especially in recent years. They are very good when it comes to structural bread and butter constitutional issues. They're not perfect, to be clear. You know, John Roberts definitely messes up, you know, every now and then, perhaps, you know, if we're being honest, perhaps every more than now and then. But on really kind of core, here's what Article 1, Article 2, Article 3 type decisions, they're typically pretty good. This is very much in line with the Nationwide Injunctions case, which is a very kind of similar bread and butter structural constitutionalism issue. The takeaway, I think, for the median American is that, yeah, you're about to lose a bunch of deep state swamp monsters at the Department of Education. That's really, really good. Now, technically speaking, Jesse, technically, because the Department of Education was created via congressional statute back during the Jimmy Carter presidency, it technically, officially would take an act of Congress to literally abolish the building. But it seems to me, if I'm reading this opinion correctly, that the court has basically given Trump leeway to fire effectively as many bureaucrats as you want. So you can basically gut the thing effectively, if not technically, officially, if you catch my drift.
Okay, no, I catch your drift. So we can't get rid of the Department of Education, but we can just about everyone in the building and basically end it for a while. Does this only apply to the Department of Education? You'll have to forgive me for asking the question, Josh, because I dream of the days where IRS agents and FBI agents get fired en masse.
It definitely should not just apply to the Department of Education. There was absolutely nothing whatsoever about the legal logic of this order that would cabinet to the Education Department. Now, look, if the administration wants to go out and start firing 1,500, 2,000 people at some other alphabet soup agency, I'm sure some left-wing NGOs will immediately follow suit on behalf of the deep state employees who would be axed. And then we'll kind of find ourselves back to where we just are. But if the court's going to be consistent, I mean, if and perhaps when that similar subsequent follow-on lawsuit is filed, if the court is just going to apply the exact same constitutional principles time and time again, and then they're going to arrive at the exact same conclusion. But, one thing that's really important about the Department of Education is that it is the lowest of the low-hanging fruit. This has been kind of a test case for conservative legal folks for 4 to 5 decades now. If you cannot gut the Department of Education, then you are stuck with the federal Leviathan and all that entails, because the Department of Education is basically the lowest of the low. This is something that never should have existed, and it is very good news, frankly, that they've cleared the way for Trump to effectively, again, if not quite officially, gut it.
Okay, let's switch gears a little bit here and talk about the Otto Penn stuff as it pertains to Ketanji Brown Jackson. Now, what I do not want to do, as you know, is to give people false hope or cook up some wild theory that's never going to come home. I don't want to do the Obama birth certificate thing. Whatever people believe about that, it was never going to do anything to remove Barack Obama from the White House, so it was a pointless waste of time. Ketanji Brown Jackson, was she an Otto Penner, and can we get rid of her?
Jesse, like you, I am hesitant to try to induce people into thinking that something could happen that won't. So the short answer is no. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. Now, Ketanji Brown Jackson definitely is a few things. She's a grade A moron. I mean, that is primarily what she is. She is frankly just a gigantic insult to the United States Supreme Court. We saw those fiery words from Amy Coney Barrett in the Nationwide Injunctions case. More recently, actually, we saw some fiery words from Sonia Sotomayor in an 8-1 opinion where Jackson was the lone dissenter. It was actually Sonia Sotomayor. I can't believe this is real life. It was literally Sonia Sotomayor who was essentially calling Ketanji Brown Jackson crazy in the recent 8-1 opinion. So she's totally, 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 completely insane, utterly unqualified, totally out to lunch. But I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Jesse, but I don't see it happening when it comes to trying to get her off the court. She could be impeached. That could potentially happen. It's probably not going to happen, but that would be the proper remedy there. This Otto Penn thing is probably not going to get rid of her, though.
Okay. Now, on the Otto Penn thing, again, I'm just trying to... I appreciate the honesty. I'm trying to give everybody realistic expectations here. The pardons. There were lots of them handed out by Joe Biden. We now know in the fluffiest possible way, the New York Times reported it's a fact. It's a fact people are willing to admit now that Joe Biden didn't sign off on all these pardons, which of course makes people think about Fauci, Mark Milley, Hunter Biden, even people who did get pardons. Can those go away?
So the short answer is probably not, but I'll walk you through my thinking on this. So there is a White House counsel legal opinion. So nowadays we have something that the White House counsel office called, or it's actually technically at the DOJ called the OLC, the Office of Legal Counsel. They are the ones who come up with constitutional theories that then try to bind succeeding presidencies years from now. Okay, so the White House counsel, I think prior to the establishment of the formal OLC back in the 1960s, a 1960s era White House counsel opinion basically says that using an Otto Penn is legally equivalent of the English king back in medieval England of delegating authority to use the royal seal, like the literal royal seal, to like the, the prince or the courtier, someone in the royal court there. So the upshot is that according to this 1960s White House opinion, this seems to be okay. Now, the longer answer is that this has really never been tested. This has never been litigated really whatsoever to my knowledge. And I'm inclined to think that it's not necessarily so utterly frivolous so as to be not worth a case. Now, I'm choosing my words very carefully, again, so as to not induce false hope. I'm skeptical that this would go anywhere because, among other things, I would question what the remedy is. So let's talk about some of these people who got pardons. You know, let's just say hypothetically, right, that a court then concludes that this pardon was issued illegitimately because the auto pen is not legitimate. In order to get standing in a federal court, you have to have a judicially viable remedy, which is a very fancy way of saying the court has to be in a position where it can actually give legitimate relief. So in this case, what exactly is the relief? I mean, let's say that someone was in jail for XYZ offense, and now he's out, you know, living out in Kansas or Idaho, whatever. He's, you know, he's enjoying his fishing on the river. I mean, is the remedy that you would literally then go take that guy and then put him back in jail? It doesn't necessarily feel like something that a federal court would be eager to do, is basically what I'm trying to say here. But it's not so crazy that it is not worth a lawsuit. I think it probably actually ultimately is worth a lawsuit.
Okay. Well, that sucks, Josh. That's two doses of reality that sucked. Let me ask you a final one. There's reporting out there, John Solomon, others reporting that a bunch of people are about to go down for the Russia hoax conspiracy. Now, go down for normal people like you and me means we get handcuffed and sent off to prison. For government people, it never means that at all. But is there a chance that the criminals who operated and still operate inside of our government actually get arrested and tried and sent to prison over all this?
I think it's possible. I'm not necessarily going to say it's probable. I mean, you know, Jesse, at this point, we're basically 10 years. I mean, the year is 2025. We are 10 years, at least 9 years, but 9 to 10 years, give or take, from the 2016 election spying on George Papadopoulos and Michael Flynn and Carter Page and all the various Trump aides. I mean, this has been happening for a long time now. So whenever we kind of have these instances where we kind of learn 5, 10 years, oh, maybe we'll get justice for something that happened a very long time ago, I'm kind of always immediately somewhat skeptical. I do think that there's a potential political angle here, Jesse, which is that it's possible that the Trump DOJ could really, really, really try in earnest to actually genuinely try to have something to show the people in the broader context of a lot of the popular discontent over the Epstein stuff. That to me is kind of my ultimate kind of, not necessarily my cause for optimism, but my cause for at least quasi-optimism is that that could be a motivating factor to genuinely actually produce something here. I'm not saying it's likely, it's not 50% or greater necessarily, but I think it's a possibility at least. I guess I'll say that.
All right. Well, thanks for giving us at least a little crumb of something, Josh. Josh, appreciate you as always, brother. All right. The Trump assassination attempt. Can't let that go either. That's kind of a big deal. Why don't we know more? Let's talk about that in a moment. Before we talk about that, let me talk to you about feeling good all the time. Energy. Having good energy. Having your mind be clear. These things are not... they don't just happen. We have to do something for them, especially today with all the garbage we eat, myself most definitely included. We have to do something to ensure that our levels are where they need to be. Our T levels are where they need to be. Our minds need something. They need Chalk. Yours does. Mine does. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. This, I know this is about sound over the top. It will change your entire life for the better. At work, at home, at play. You give Chalk 2-3 months. Maybe it's a male vitality stack. That's what I take. Maybe it's a female vitality stack. Maybe it's Chalk lip powder. You take Chalk 2-3 months. You will never stop. You will finally realize, oh my gosh, I was living in a fog and didn't know it. Do you want a 17.76% discount? Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, I think the attempted assassination of Donald Trump is still kind of a big deal. As we discussed, it's not one of those things we should just let go, let's move on. No. We just had the 1-year anniversary of somebody who tried to blow Donald Trump's head off, and that somebody achieved a rooftop 148 meters from the president with a high-powered rifle and frankly made the shot. The president turned his head at the exact moment, or else we are having a whole different discussion right now. So what happened? Senate just released a pair of reports. Let's talk to Susan Crabtree about this, national political correspondent for Real Clear Politics. Love them so much. Susan, Senate reports, what do they say?
Oh, the Senate reports were It was a solemn weekend for most people, and I thought it was extremely well done in terms of how people commemorated this. But the Senate reports were a gold mine, and it was like Christmas in July for me when I was reading through these things, because for the last year, I have been reporting on so many details about this, and it were all in these Senate reports. As you know, the big headlines in the last week that I reported on were that the suspensions were only for the junior officers, junior agents. Their supervisors skated, and not only that, they got big promotions. And that was just one of the many headlines that were that I reported on and were in those Senate reports.
So the supervisors got promoted, four agents got 10, do I believe it was 42-day suspensions, and we're all just going to wash our hands of it. That's where we're at now with this whole thing. Is that it?
Well, yes, it seems like, yeah, because everyone was at fault, no one was at fault. And that is not okay. That is not sufficient for Helen Comporatore, the widow of Corey Comporatore, the retired fireman that was killed, shot and killed. And thankfully, Donald Trump, they did put a counter sniper into the rally that day. It came very late in the rally, the rally planning. 2 days before the rally was set to begin, they had the counter sniper force them to do their work very, very quickly. Usually that takes 5 to 6 days. And so that here where we here's this is where we are right now. We're learning more details about it, but we still don't know anything about the motive for Thomas Crooks, anything about what was on his encrypted apps. And to me, that's just beyond the pale at this point. We should know far more. And Senator Rand Paul, he concluded his report by saying that the FBI was not cooperating with him.
Susan, thank you so much. I appreciate you. So the FBI is not cooperating. The supervisors got promotions. Listen. I'm gonna tie a couple different stories together here. Joe Biden's auto pen, we just brought that up, and nobody being held to account. The Epstein stuff, everybody's mad about. We don't want to drop the Epstein stuff. If rich, powerful men were abusing young women, we want them held to account. Now we have Secret Service, FBI, who know, failures beyond belief that almost cost Donald Trump his life. Supervisors get promoted. Junior agents get a couple slaps on the wrist. What are all these stories have in common? Government people, powerful people getting away with things normal people would be fired or sent to prison for. And everyone in this country, especially everybody in our government, Donald Trump included, had better get it through their heads that this is what the American people are disgusted with. We are tired of living in a country where people in government can do the most horrific things in the world, and it's not only that they don't get fired, most of them get promoted, never held to account. Things you would go to prison for, things I would go to prison for. We have to change how this works in the country. Secret Service promoting the bad guys. And look, maybe you're sitting there saying, well, maybe it was negligence. Maybe it was. I'm not sitting here telling you I know what happened that day, and I don't know what happened that day because the government won't tell me. And even if the government did tell me by this point in time, I wouldn't believe them because they promoted everybody who almost got Donald Trump killed. This is where we are as a country, and it is a dangerous, dangerous place to be, where we have no trust in our institutions, and the institutions we don't trust don't seem even that interested in earning that trust back. Scary place to be. Let's move on. I want to talk to you about something really quickly. Olive oil. We don't think about olive oil much, obviously. Everyone has a bottle in their house and everyone cooks with it. But I'm going to tell you something uncomfortable about that bottle of olive oil. It's old. Do you know that? Even stuff you find in the grocery store, all that stuff, months, years old. We care about freshness with everything else, don't we? You want fresh fruit? You want fresh fruit or old fruit? Fresh buns or old buns? Fresh meat or old meat? Everyone cares about freshness for everything else, but then when it comes to olive oil, we walk down the grocery store aisle and we find the bottle we like the looks of and we grab it and we throw it in the cart. Don't do that. How about a free bottle of olive oil? A $39 bottle of olive oil. All you'll have to do is pay a buck to help cover the shipping, and you'll get to taste the difference in fresh olive oil versus garbage old olive oil. How do you get something like that? I'm not asking you to sign up for something. Sign your life away. You go to farmfresh246.com and get yourself a fresh bottle of olive oil. It's what a difference. We'll be back. Here's a little tidbit for you, kind of one of those ones that makes you wince a little bit. 2020, you remember that year, right? It wasn't all that long ago. Not asking you to go back in time too far. $100,000 back then, the buying power of $100,000. Yeah, you need $124,000 today to match the buying power you had 5 years ago. Now, I'm no expert, but that sure sounds like things haven't gone well. I wonder what happened. Joining me now, the great Carol Roth, two-time New York Times best-selling author, recovering investment banker. Hey, Carol, I lost 24% of my income in 5 years. How'd that happen?
Actually, you lost more than that, Jesse. That's just what they're reporting. Because that's the official numbers, and the official numbers don't actually take into account what's really happening. So you lost even more of your buying power. You know, there are two great books that came out over the last couple of years. One was called The War on Small Business. The other one was called You Will Own Nothing. Pretty exceptional author. I think her name was Carol Roth or something like that, that predicted this was going to happen. And I think that we talked about this from the beginning of 2020 onward. And this is an entirely predictable outcome of bad Federal Reserve and fiscal policy that basically traded off people getting, you know, some sort of a small stimulus check, small four-figure stimulus check for constant inflation that, you know, eats up their purchasing power over time. And unfortunately, people don't seem to understand that when you take actions, there are always consequences with them. They want to pretend that you can just do things and that there isn't something that happens on the other side. And particularly when it comes to things like economics and math, it's pretty clear what the options are on the other side. You can put your head in the sand, but that doesn't mean that your paycheck that was once, you know, $124,000 is now worth a fraction of that.
Okay, Carol, it frustrates me so much to hear the honest answer, because there were people like you screaming this back then. And yet, I mean, I remember Republicans running on stimulus checks, handing out stimulus. No, we got to hand out the stimmy checks, got to hand out the stimulus checks. And it was just the most basic thing in the world that a child could understand. You can't just print and spend a bunch of money you don't have and hand it out to people without consequences. And yet no one in DC knows this, or they do, and they're just a bunch of evil, lying scumbags.
I'm going to take door number two, and I bet I'm going to win the big prize behind it. unfortunately, we have tribalism. And when tribalism happens, people tend to ignore reality. And we're seeing that over and over again. You can be supportive of your favorite politician in general, and when they come up with a bad policy, you should still criticize them because it's a bad policy. And just because we had bad policies before doesn't mean that we should continue to double down on them when they don't work. And that is the frustration, is that it's very easy to hold some politician, some party accountable when you're on the other side and you're not in charge. But as soon as you have the opportunity to do something, we don't have enough people who are more willing to go to the mat. And they just seem to forget everything that they argued for the last time around. Now they're making excuses for it. So until we get some consistency, none of this is going to change. And the other thing that's very frustrating to me is that people are willing to organize and go crazy about pretty minor things. But when it comes to something like, hey, you've worked for days, months, and years, and now we're going to just completely erase that via inflation, we don't get the same kind of activism. Perhaps some of it is economic and financial literacy, but there just doesn't seem to be that gumption when they're stealing from you to do the things that this country was founded on. Remember when there was a tea party over excise taxes on tea? Somehow that's been lost over time as men have gotten soft.
Yeah, the slow frog boil seems to get us. Okay, you know what? Let's change subjects before my blood pressure just causes a blood vessel to burst right now. Jerome Powell was on TV a couple weeks ago. Here's what he said.
But, Chair, would the Fed have cut more by now if it weren't for the tariffs?
So I do think that I think that's right. We're in effect, we went on hold when we saw the size of the tariffs and where and essentially all inflation forecasts for the United States went up materially as a consequence of the tariffs. So we didn't overreact. In fact, we didn't react at all. We're simply taking some time. As long as the U.S. economy is in solid shape, we think the prudent thing to do is to wait and learn more and see what those effects might be. And again, they haven't really shown up. And, you know, so we're for now, we're waiting.
Okay, Carol, there's all kinds of history here. Can you explain why Donald Trump very clearly hates Jerome Powell? They've already prepped his successor, or they've begun preparations for his successor. Trump trashes him publicly every day. I'm no Jerome Powell fan, but what is the history here? Why does he hate him? Why won't they cut rates? What's going on?
Well, you know, part of the trashing of Jerome Powell really is a trashing of the Fed, which is just an absolute terrible institution. When Trump talks about how awful Jerome Powell is, he's right. But the last potentially good Fed chair that we had was Paul Volcker in the late 70s and early 80s. So it's not like we've had this amazing run of Fed chairs. The institution itself is poisonous. Jerome Powell's been wrong about pretty much everything. He cut rates and held them down for far too long. He said inflation was going to be transitory and it wasn't going to be a problem. You know, then he hiked too fast and then he held it up too long. So, you know, he has been behind the curve, no pun intended, at every point in time. And why President Trump is frustrated is because the Biden administration handed the Trump administration a very difficult fiscal position. We have 120%+ debt to GDP. We have deficits that are wartime level deficits, but we're not engaged in a war and we're not in a recession. And at this point, our interest expense exceeds our defense spending, which is never a good metric for a country, and its strength. So what he's frustrated by is the fact that we have so much debt that needs to be financed and refinanced. And now rates are high, which means that we are going to get even higher amounts of interest expense. And that is going to expand our deficit, which is then going to push up interest rates even more. And we're going to end up in something that looks like a debt spiral. So he's frustrated. The challenge is that the Fed doesn't control what's called the long end of the yield curve, the long dated security, something like the yield on the 10-year. Only the short end is what they directly affect. And so really at this point, what is driving that is fiscal policy. So it's true that there is some level of frustration and Powell is bad and it's going to make sense to replace him. But the things that we could have done, we haven't done in order to affect that change because the fiscal policy is now dominating monetary policy. And there are things that the Treasury probably can do and will be doing, but there is a price to pay, which takes our discussion full circle. The things that they can do to change things around probably lead to more inflation.
So we're still spending and printing too much money. Is that what you're saying?
if you want to just tie it up in a nice little bow, Jesse, I think that's a very easy way to say it.
All right. I do want to address this before I let you go. Trump, interest rates, says he wants them at 1%. Here he was.
Each point costs us $360 billion. Billion. 1 point, $360 billion. 2 points, you got $600, $700 billion. And we're way high. We're at 450 or 425? 450? And how do you go borrow money at 1% when the Fed has you at 450? And, you know, it's not that easy. I get angry at them. Why are we paying so much? You know, because he's got you up at this number. And we should be at 1 point, we should be at 1%.
Carol, should we be at 1%? That sounds great to me, but should we be at 1%?
Well, it's funny. The market doesn't seem to think so. The market thinks that we should be at 4.5%, which is where the market is today. And that's the challenge, is that the longer term securities, as I was saying, that the yield on those longer term securities are determined by supply and demand. We no longer have central banks from around the world demanding to buy treasuries. They used to give us a pass, which is why we used to have such low interest rates. And they would load up on our treasury securities. But now, you know, last 10 years, they've been net sellers and they've been replacing that with gold, which means that the people in the market who are buying our securities are those who are more price sensitive. They're demanding a premium to hold our debt for longer. And we've gotten some debt downgrades over the last couple years, including a couple months ago. So they're demanding extra premium for that. And we have a lot of supply that's going into the market that's going to impact that supply and demand ratio. Now, there are things coming down the pike that you can see the Treasury and the administration setting up. Something like the Genius Act, which talks about stable coins being backed by treasuries and a link by which central bank reserves could be used to back those, that could then increase demand from stable coins to buy treasuries. There are other things that they can do to increase the demand and to try to drive that interest rate down, which, you know, probably doesn't get to one, but maybe they can do it. But the challenge is, as I've said before, there is a trade-off. And when they do that, that is going to be accommodative policy. That's going to be stimulative policy, which means that you are going to get inflation somewhere. It could come in asset prices, like we saw, you know, early after the Great Recession, financial prices, where housing prices and stocks and those kinds of things continue to go up more than, let's say, the direct cost of living. But some of the tricks that they may do in order to get that interest rate down could also end up impacting the cost of living. Either way, it's going to drive continued non-merit-based inequality. It's going to create more haves and have-nots. And that is not a good thing for this country. And that's not what we're trying to solve for right now. So I do think there will be a time when interest rates will go down. It will be based on some probably funky policy. And there will be, as there always is, a price to pay.
Ugh. Thanks a lot, Carol. Thank you, Carol. Come back soon. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And wildlife encounters can be scary things. This gentleman, he knows what I'm talking about.
I heard the roar. I felt that roar. I knew to keep it pushing. I knew that.
Curtis Jones says he was walking near Rauber Street late Wednesday when he saw people running from what appeared to be a large wild cat.
After I see the people run, I just see something big just walking just right over here, right here by the bush. It went right over here. I swear, I promise you, it went right over there. And it said roar, and I just kept walking. I seen it, seen me, see it. So in my head, I'm like, nah, I gotta go, man. I'm out. It's about like this big. Word. It was just walking, slithering. Like, it was, I don't know, man.
A shelter in place was ordered and then lifted when RPD was unable to verify the presence of a wild animal. Police say no reports have been substantiated. Jones tells me he remains on edge.
Gotta keep this bat right here. I'm gonna keep this bat right here, man, just in case. I'm gonna protect this. I ain't gonna let nothing happen to us, nothing, okay? They ain't find it last night. It's still out here. It could be out here in one of these bushes or something. You know, them mountain lion, they be, wow, they be crawling. And, you know, they serious. I don't play with lions. I don't play with tigers, bears, nothing with the wild. I don't play with those. I promise you. I don't even do roller coasters. I'm good.
I'll see you tomorrow.